Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Outdoor patios, landscaping design, lawn maintenance, and more. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Joe, big win for Tennessee over the weekend. They went 69-65 on the road against Vanderbilt. We knew it would be a great game. It was. Awesome stuff between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. And we also said last week, Joe, that if you're one of these teams and you could win both of these games, that'd be a heck of a swing in the positive direction for your resume. And Tennessee gets the hard one out of the way on the road. Now, we'll see if Vanderbilt can respond at the end of the year and beat Tennessee on the road, but we'll get to that coming up here in a couple of weeks. What did you make of Tennessee and their 69-65 win against Vanderbilt on the road over the weekend?
Just super impressive. Just what an impressive – that game was tremendously physical. And, I thought both teams played with just the kind of desperation you hope to see in a rivalry game. You know, going into that game, right before that game, the NCAA Selection Committee gave out its top 16 seeds. So it's really the only actual picture we get of everything. And Vanderbilt was a four. I was a little surprised by that. Vanderbilt was on the four line, was one of the top 16 seeds. And the next two, they said, on the five line were Alabama and Arkansas. So, I mean, to me, Tennessee going into the game was a clear five. Then they win that game on the road. I mean, like, I know, give you a little preview here. I still have Tennessee as a five right now, along with Vanderbilt, dragging them down to that five line. But, I mean, that, you know, their resume keeps improving and building to the point where, you know, they got a real chance here to push into to being a top four seed. But beyond that, just the win itself, I feel like the Tennessee freshmen in particular were really impressive, and not just Nate Ament, who really didn't have a great game. I thought Vanderbilt did a great job against him. They threw a bunch of different guys at him. They threw Nickel at him. They threw Chandler Bing at him a lot.
They did.
And really, Bing did a great job, but he hung in there and, of course, hit that winning shot. But a lot of those guys, I thought, had really good contributions for Tennessee, and you can kind of see. I mean, Dwayne Brown's going to be good, man. Dwayne Brown's going to be good. Amari Evans is going to be good. Those guys come off the bench and give you, you know, and then Bishop Boswell has back-to-back buckets that might have been as important a stretch in that game as there was when it looked like Vanderbilt might be, you know, getting that separation. And then Rick Barnes, we know he's going to have a great, you know, defensive plan. Usually I thought they almost face-guarded Tyler Nickel, and they said, you know, everybody else, you guys can get shots, including Tyler Tanner. Tyler Nickel is not getting open looks. He's 1-for-8 in the game. Hit one late big three in kind of a scramble situation off a pass from Tanner, but he basically was taken out of the game. That's a 19-point-a-game dude.
Yep, for sure. Good stuff on the defensive front for Tennessee there. Vanderbilt did get Duke Miles back in this game. He's 12 points, 3 of 13 from the field in 27 minutes of action. So, you know, obviously not the result that Vanderbilt is looking for there, but good to see Duke Miles back out there for Vanderbilt. You can tell he's going to make a difference.
Yeah, he is. He has some tremendous playmaking. He just makes a difference defensively for sure. They need that depth. And so just watching him play, he was rusty. He didn't shoot it well, but he took a couple shots, but he kind of does. He's a, you know, he'll take some wild ones here and there. But that's going to be a big deal for them getting him back. Still, it's a bitter loss for them. And I didn't realize this, but I saw some Vols fans. So 15 of 17, I believe, here. Remember the Tyron – well, let's see. Well, last year they got him. Vanderbilt got him, which was huge for Byington his first year. And then you had the Tyron Lawrence last second in that incredible game a couple years ago. And that's it. So, you know, this was kind of the year – think about where these two teams were really just a few weeks ago. Like Vanderbilt's – talking two seed, and Tennessee's like, what's going on with this team? And I mean, I think they're very, very equally matched teams. I think it should be a really good game in Knoxville, and maybe we'll get another one here.
Well, I saw some discussion on this front after the game from both sides, from Tennessee fans and from Vanderbilt fans. There are a lot of Tennessee fans in that building on Saturday. Were you surprised by that, given how good Vanderbilt has been this year?
Well, you called the rant – If you didn't call the rant today, that was going
to
be my.
You're welcome to have.
Oh, no. I like your rant, but my and I was then I was like maybe I'll save this, but no. I mean, it's a mini rant. That's embarrassing for Vanderbilt, man. Like, I'm sorry, but I understand. Tennessee fans are everywhere. They're all over this city, but this team and what this Vanderbilt team has done. And what they are, which to me is, I mean, I think they're a really strong second weekend kind of team. You haven't had that many in your history. Like, there's a good basketball tradition at Vanderbilt, but like this team can do things, and you've had plenty of time here to catch up with this team. Like early in the year, when Byington and Shea Ralph were both talking about wanting more fan support. Yeah, you know, I looked at it. And I was like, yeah, there aren't that many attractive games. You know, it'll get better when SEC play happens, and it's just again, it's impressive from the Tennessee fan front, and you know, Vols fans like they're gonna find a way to get into buildings. But I still was a little bit stunned at what sounded like almost a 50-50 crowd, and you saw some of the celebration stuff after the game. There was a lot
of Tennessee fans in there.
A lot of Tennessee. More Tennessee fans in that building than there should have been. Right? Because that just that means that there are some Vanderbilt fans with really good seats who sold to Tennessee fans. And I just don't understand that for that game. So I think it's a little bit embarrassing on the Vanderbilt fan front, you know. And I'm trying not to do too much of the fan-shaming thing. On things like this, but it was a little bit surprising given how good this team is.
Well, I was surprised. I'm not surprised that Tennessee fans wanted in there, right? Like, this is, you know, there's plenty of Tennessee fans that live in Nashville, so I understand that, right?
Sure.
It's not like Nashville is not some hotbed for Tennessee fans around here. But given the stakes of the game, frankly, how good Vanderbilt has been, and not just how good they've been, Joe, but how good they've been at home. Like, they've been a really good team at home. I thought that you would see probably more of a, I don't know, 70-30-ish type Vanderbilt crowd.
I don't know what it was.
I just know there's the shot of Tennessee coming off the floor where it's kind of like underneath and you can look up and see. I mean, it looked like the whole side of the arena was Tennessee fans there.
Yeah, and I've covered that game many times when it was pretty close to 50-50. But again, that was it. I mean, Tennessee has been the superior program for quite a while now. Rick Barnes has made that reality, and obviously Vanderbilt's had their issues trying to figure out a good coach. They have one now. I mean, I remember, you know, the 18-19 season, so the 19 game, incredible night in that building. That was, I think, I don't know if Tennessee was number one. They were close to it. Grant Williams, that was a game, you know, where you know, the hook and hold, all that stuff that went down. And Vanderbilt rose up and played this. I mean, like that night was probably not quite – it was a little bit more Vanderbilt than Tennessee, but it was close. It was close to 50-50. Okay, well, when you have a team that's like a national championship contender and then the other team is actually having a hugely disappointing season, I mean, okay, then you get that.
Sure.
I mean, again, Tennessee continues to be good and has been good, but this Vanderbilt season, to me, dictated a little bit more of a dominant home crowd for this one. I think, yeah, you saw it last week. Vanderbilt was putting out, pleas for, like, students to get your student tickets. Like, how does that happen for the Tennessee game?
Vanderbilt will be at home on Wednesday against Georgia, on the road against Kentucky coming up on Saturday. Big game for them there. On the road against Ole Miss, and then on the road against Tennessee. So four more games in the regular season for Vanderbilt coming up. Tennessee has Alabama, I believe, next Saturday. So that'll be a big one, too.
That's absolutely a big one. And that's one of those that they've kind of dominated. I do want a quick shout-out because George in the YouTube chat is talking about Predemption, Stilly ripping Saros. Also, was telling me on Twitter that Nate Amen is the same as J.P. Prince.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, yeah, well.
There we go.
Okay. Sure thing.
J.P. Prince.
Overrated. Very overrated. J.P. Prince.
Okay.
Scotty Hobson.
There you go.
So some excellent, the Saros takes. I mean, Saros is pretty freaking good.
He was in the Olympics, yeah.
I mean, the Athletic Hockey Show I was listening to last night were making the case that Saros upped his trade value during this tournament.
Well.
And Preds should get on the phone immediately.
If he did, I'd probably get on the phone. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on Tennessee's win against Vanderbilt. It was a huge weekend of college basketball. We will continue that discussion coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Robbie and Rex Road, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up at 7:30. Get his thoughts on Team USA's win against Team Canada yesterday. And the Preds back in action this week. Trade deadline right around the corner. So all that coming up with Alex Doherty. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. Joe, it was a wild weekend in college basketball. Five top 10 teams lose this weekend. Now, some of that was because there were some top five, top 10 matchups. So yes. Somebody's got to lose. But there were five overall. So Michigan loses. They go down, number one Michigan, to Duke. Houston loses. So number one and number two go down. You had Cincinnati take down Kansas. You had BYU take down Iowa State. And Mick Cronin inspiring his team to victory against Illinois in overtime. So five top 10 teams going down over the weekend.
Yeah, that was amazing. That, if anybody didn't see the finish of UCLA, Illinois, and if anybody's of a certain age, you remember Tyus Edney in the NCAA tournament for UCLA, I think, against Missouri. I think that's right. Coast to coast with a few seconds, like 4 seconds on the clock, and Donovan Dent just went coast to coast to beat Illinois. Incredible. Huge games. Duke-Michigan was obviously the headliner. So Michigan gets the number one overall seed from the committee. And then I think Duke immediately takes it from them. I mean, I don't see how Duke isn't the number one overall seed now with that win, gigantic win. And shout out to the Vingans, by the way,
yeah.
Because, you know, we've got another addition to the Vingan family, Eliza, and you've got
Harlan was there.
And then Harlan, Vingan's dad, was in the house for that game.
Yeah.
Duke beats Michigan, and as Vingan says, and USA men win their first gold since 1980. Pretty good weekend for the Vingans.
Not bad.
Yeah. So, I was really, really impressed with Arizona without Coa Pete going into Houston. Just a really impressive win. So, huge weekend of college hoops, and I do think that I think that Michigan Duke game. I think that that could be a national championship game. I still kind of feel like Michigan's the best team. Of course, I picked that wrong, just like most of my picks. And
now the proper time to tell our listeners that Ian and I were both 5-1, and you were 1-5 to kick off weekend winners.
So both 5-1 with your locks, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So 6 points, and then I go 1-5. Yeah. Again. Yeah. College hoops expert. Here, let's hear some of your picks. Great. How about I'll take Michigan. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take Houston. Cool. I'll take – what else did I screw up? I mean, I just across the board.
You locked down on Houston.
Yeah, I locked down on Houston.
You're confident on Houston.
Good call. Yeah. Yeah. So, again, that's why I don't gamble pretty much. But still, huge weekend, college basketball. That game, I love the trend of having like a big, you know, like non-league game.
Sure.
It's not always going to be that good. Last year, Duke did the same thing, but it was against Illinois, and they beat him by like a million. So no one cared. But I kind of liked that, and yeah, it felt like a title game or Final Four game. I just think Michigan shot terribly, but also, I mean, Cameron Boozer is a freshman. He's National Player of the Year to me. He watch him in that game. All the things that he did down the stretch. It's just incredible that someone that young understands. I mean, I understand. You know, I think his dad played in the NBA. Dad was a star at Duke, but. He's got an incredible feel for everything, and he was just the best player on the court, and that's the main reason they won.
He did not have 29-10 like I said he would. He did have 18-10, so close enough. We'll round up.
I forgot you said that. Well, he had foul trouble.
He did.
So he might have.
He'd played more. He'd got all those points. Michigan, to your point, shot 40% from the field, including 24% from three. So not very good.
Well, they got crushed on the boards. I mean, that's the thing that I would never – I mean, Michigan, for people, you know, don't watch the sport or watch them. I mean, they've got – they go basically 6-9 across the board, 3-4-5. You know, their three, Yaxel Lindeborg is going to be a first-round pick. And then, you know, Adai Mara, who's 7 whatever, 7-4, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're huge. They kill everybody on the glass, and Duke got them, man. Duke didn't let them get any. Like, it was just like one and done when Michigan was missing, which is so impressive. John Shire, by the way, is there's a lot of National Coach of the Year possibilities out there. By the way, shout out to Casey Alexander, who I think should get some mention in Belmont, winning the MVC regular season championship. Huge for them.
Yeah.
Big deal. And maybe they should get some, you know, some votes in the top 25 at this point. They're clearly the right now the best auto bid. They're going to be the highest 12 seed at this point if they get in. But John Shire should get some National Coach of the Year love, I think. That job is, like, following Krzyzewski, it's like it's a doomed proposition. And I understand. Oh, really? Yeah, give someone Duke, and they immediately have all these advantages, and Duke recruits for itself to a large extent. But that guy is a really good coach. And down the stretch of that game, every ATO, every play after timeouts was something perfect to get like a dunk or a wide open shot. I mean, that's big-time coaching.
Let me tell you this, like, you know, we just mentioned the top 10. You know, I watched a little bit of Florida over the weekend, and I realized they're playing Ole Miss, and Ole Miss not that good. Florida's killing everyone right now. Like, yeah. they are, you know, they've won, what is it now? Let's see here, 7 in a row, and they are destroying, with the exception of Vanderbilt, they are destroying everyone that they play. And I understand, you know, we've talked about this, you know, the SEC is not as strong as it was a year ago, but Florida looks pretty scary heading into this the postseason right around the corner.
Florida is very scary. And that does, you know, you bring up that Vanderbilt game, 98-94, not in overtime. Yep. 98-94 Florida at Vanderbilt. That tells you, like, Vanderbilt can compete at, like, at a high, high level. Also, yeah, that's a huge win for Florida. And, you know, Auburn went in and beat them, which is part of why Auburn, you know, I think is going to get in. And, by the way, they got a huge one.
They sure did.
Against Kentucky. But, yes, Florida is certainly the team with the – they're going to win the SEC. They're the team with the highest ceiling. They have the exact same front court that won it all. It's all year it's just been about, you know, can they shoot it well enough? What about their guards? You had to replace the backcourt. I mean, I wonder if Denzel Aberdeen wishes he had stayed there instead of gone to Kentucky. But Boogie Fland is a heck of an all-around player, doesn't shoot well. Xavien Lee finally is – he's from Princeton. He is now shooting – and so they have just enough shooting with everything else that they are absolutely scary. You know, last year, you think about, like, Walter Clayton and what he did, like, late in games to save them. He was so good. And Will Richard. And those guys were Elijah Martin. That was an incredible backcourt to go with this front court. That's a national champion. I don't know if this is a national champion, but you have to consider them a Final Four contender at this point.
You mentioned the big win for Auburn. What about Kentucky? I mean, it's been so up and down with them this year. I mean, obviously, the two comeback wins against Tennessee were awesome, and you feel great about those if you're a Kentucky fan.
What if you didn't have those?
But what if you didn't have them? That's what I was going to say. Like, what if you didn't have those? Like, what would we be talking about with Kentucky?
You know, Kentucky, like, they have done enough, and those wins are huge, you know, especially, like, the road win. You know, the win at Tennessee is a very valuable win for them. But you look through their and they won at Arkansas. So those two wins, their profile is still like they're in pretty good shape here to get in. But I don't know, man. Like, they, you know, that's three in a row now. There was a questionable call, you know, Colin Chandler got called for like a push up, and it was a total flop. And I generally don't like refs going for that stuff. But he extended the arms too. It's like you can't, like, you have to be smarter than that. So, by the way, did you see Pope's meltdown about that?
I did.
Yes. We should play that at some point this week. It was actually one of the greatest, like, I'm not saying anything about the horrific officiating that cost us again. I no excuses about the horrible, awful, personal, terrible. Like, it was like, it was,
I kind of respected it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the problem is then the cameras caught him screaming, I don't care if they cheated on it. It's like, oh, now see, you screwed up the thing. But, I tell you what, at South Carolina, should win that. Then they got Vanderbilt coming in, at Texas A&M, Florida at home. If they lose three of the four, which is absolutely possible, then you're talking about 18-13, and they're right there, I think, on the bubble.
Yeah.
They're much more of a bubble team coming to Nashville. So we'll see. It's been one heck of a roller coaster ride, Mark Pope's second year.
We'll be joined by Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. We head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Alex Doherty from the Tennessean to the program. Alex, good morning. How are you?
I am great. Good morning to everyone in the great USA, where the gold medal resides for the next 4 years.
You're darn right it does. Just beautiful stuff yesterday from Team USA. They get the win in overtime. So let's start there. Jack Hughes scores the game winner. It's a legendary performance from Connor Hellebuck in goal yesterday. And the United States wins the goal for the first time since the Miracle on Ice in 1980. What did you make of that game, and how big a deal is this for USA hockey, for hockey in this country as a sport?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this game. I mean, you guys touched on it earlier with, you know, the speed and the elite level of play just constantly in the game. It was just incredible to watch. I was thinking today, or last night and then this morning, about how this team was constructed. And there was some stuff that came out after the win where the U.S. kind of was really emphasizing, you know, the culture of the team and how that was more important when they constructed it. Because if we go back, you know, there were some questions about some of the moves. I mean, obviously the big players were going to be in. You know, you knew that Quinn Hughes and Jack Hughes and Austin Matthews and you knew the goaltending was going to be there. But, like, down the lineup, there were some questions about, you know, JT Miller, about Vincent Trocheck, about Clayton Keller, and these guys didn't play, like, a major role. But, like, I think there's something to be said for, at the Olympics specifically, you have 2 weeks to create just, like, the perfect culture to win a game, right, to win the biggest game imaginable. And it's not that Canada, you know, put together a lineup of scrubs out. I mean, they put the best lineup they could. But I think making that team such a unified group that you could tell Jack Hughes talking about it after the game, like they were such a tight group, and that is really hard to do in just a 2 week span. You see the same thing, by the way, with that 1980 team. I mean, they talked about it. If you've seen the documentaries about it, you see the camaraderie that, you know, they're still together. They still talk to each other. It's like that was, they almost, you know, that team is a little different because they almost unified in their hatred of Herb Brooks, right?
Yeah.
There's a little different, but I just think there's something to be said for, like, the culture that they created with this lineup. And then just, like, the sort of backs against the wall, like, Canada was just unbelievable in that second and third period. And then they just, I mean, obviously Connor Hellebuck was, I mean, the MVP of that game, but they had to find a way to release the pressure when they could, and they had guys that could do that. It was just astonishing to watch. I'm glad that it turned out the way that it did. You know, sometimes these things cannot turn out the way you think they're going to when there's a high profile matchup. I did think it was going to be a low scoring game. I mean, I just think that the defense for both sides was too good, even though the forward power is great. The other thing I wanted to mention is, like, I think there's something weird happened with the top Canada players yesterday. Because if you think about, I think, so Connor McDavid had the breakaway early in the game. And like, normally Connor McDavid breakaway, it's just like, okay, well, how is he going to score this one? And he just, like, over stick handles, right? He does a little too much and then just kind of tucks the puck right into Hellebuck's pad. Then you had the Nathan MacKinnon miss on the backside. That was a pretty bad miss, to be honest.
The wide open Macklin net.
Wide open net. Macklin Celebrini had a breakaway and he just kind of flubbed it. You know, it was very strange to watch these, like, elite players for Canada in the very final moment, except for the Cale Makar goal, of course. Just messed it up. That was strange to watch, but overall, I mean, probably one of my top three favorite sporting moments, like, of all time. It was just, that was so much fun to watch. I loved every minute of it, and I'm so glad it turned out the way it did.
So you're saying Canada choked, essentially. You can say it.
Exactly that.
Have some of that.
It's obviously Canada has just incredible talent everywhere. It was weird, right? I mean,
Celebrini had how many primo chances on top of the breakaway? That guy looked utterly just miserable on the bench after that. I mean, man,
the thing that Canada was most worried about, their goaltending. I don't think Jordan Binnington played poorly. I think he was fine. It was kind of the forward group that couldn't find that final punch, and Hellebuyck, all the credit in the world. I mean, that guy is so talented. He's like the perfect goalie for that because he's got the perfect size. He's quick. He can track the puck well. He made some otherworldly saves, but he was incredible. But Canada, I mean, like, would you have made a single chance or a single change to their roster? Obviously, other than Sidney Crosby being healthy, like, I mean, they had the right lineup. It's just like it didn't work, and it was strange.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, the U.S. left Caulfield at home. They left Jason Robertson at home, and there was all sorts of talk right. about that heading into the tournament. And then they end up winning gold anyway. Like, I just
– whiskey drinkers.
Whiskey, yeah, a lot of whiskey drinkers. I mean, it's –
That's right.
I just wonder, there's all sorts of discourse today about, like, the Hughes goal and what that's going to do for the league. I have no idea, like, in terms of pure numbers moving forward here, what this is going to mean in terms of growth of the game. But, like, it goes back to, Alex, like, just how stupid it's been to not have this in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like, surely, I don't know what the numbers are going to say. I'm sure the ratings will come out at some point today, and I'm sure it'll be very good. But, like, if you're watching that, if you're Gary Bettman yesterday, if you're anybody involved with the NHL or the NHLPA, the fact that you guys let this happen where you didn't go to the Olympics the last couple of times out is absurd based on what we just watched yesterday.
Yeah, and now, there's no guarantee that we get it again, right? I mean,
right.
Like, I feel like the momentum is there, but – two major players got injured, and we don't know. I mean, Sidney Crosby's doesn't seem like it's a big deal, but, that team, obviously Pittsburgh, doesn't want anything to do with him getting injured there. Kevin Fiala's out for the year. So, like, does that hurt it? I don't know. I mean, at some point, the NHLPA has to face the music and be like, okay, well, if we're going to do this, injuries are going to happen. We can't prevent that. But it is just like that was incredible for the game. I mean, and not just that matchup, but the whole tournament was great. I mean, the semifinal with Canada and Finland, U.S. Slovakia wasn't as much of a game, but U.S. Finland or Canada and Finland was great. The U.S. Sweden game in the quarterfinal was amazing. The whole tournament was great. You had players, top players going up. I think I saw something where over 20 different players scored a game winning goal in the tournament. Like, it just, so many players stepped up for their country. It was awesome to watch. I loved it. Now, Robbie, we get to go watch the Nashville Predators play the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's go. We were talking about that, Alex. Yeah, like you said, and we were talking earlier, like this game just on its own, the speed, it was just insane. Like, just it was mesmerizing. So for someone who isn't familiar with hockey, if that's like their first experience or like maybe the most intense experience of watching a game, how does that translate into, okay, now I want to get into hockey? And maybe, you get into some NHL February stuff, it's not great. But I always tell people, please watch some playoff hockey games and give it a try. Watch a game 7 and tell me that that's not incredibly compelling, sports content. Do you think that there's going to be a tangible, impact here from that perspective? I mean, we can all agree, like, kids watch this, like, this is going to have an impact. But what about just, like, general fandom?
I assume you're talking about in the U.S. alone, because obviously those other countries, already are pretty saturated with hockey creation. But so I when I think about this kind of topic, I think about how – the transformation of U.S. women's soccer. It's a little different, but, was it 94, 96, somewhere in there, the U.S. win over China, I think, Brandi Chastain, that whole thing.
96 like, or 98 even, but yeah. Late 90s.
In the 90s, yeah. So that was a formative moment, right, for U.S. women's soccer. And look at it now. I mean, like it's been, you know, dominant for the last, and you have huge swaths of people of young women and girls playing that sport. Could you have something similar to this? Now, I think the U.S. hockey system is already pretty good, but I could it get better? Yeah, I think it definitely could. I think it's always going to have a little bit of regionalism, right, because of it's a cold weather sport, and you've got, you know, the idea of, you know, Minnesota being like the sort of hub of U.S. hockey because, you know, they got lakes everywhere and they freeze and kids can go out and play like whenever they want to. You're not going to have that in Texas. You're not going to have that in Tennessee even. So you need, you know, it's unlike basketball where you can have a gym, you know, in every state, in every city. But like, I think that there's, that had to have impacted kids somewhere saying, you know, watching Jack Hughes go out there and with a bloody mouth, you know, score the goal and then skating around with the American flag, like that means something, you know. You can't tell me it doesn't. It was so much fun to watch. And then I think that the rivalry is another thing. Like, people, not only do you want to play for the U.S., but you want to play for the U.S. and you want to beat Canada, right? There's something to that too. Like, not only do kids want to go out and play the sport, but they want to beat, you know, the team that everyone wants to beat, and that's Canada right now. So that helped as well. If U.S. loses, Canada wins again. You know, it's kind of the same as usual. That's normally what happens. But now you get this upset win, and it sort of transforms the whole narrative.
All right, Alex, last thing for you. The trade deadline is coming right around the corner here for the Preds. We'll see, you know, what the wins and losses look like before then. But they're 4 points out right now as we sit here today. What's your expectation for what could happen here over the next couple of weeks for the Predators?
Yeah, I think you got to move some guys. I think it's time to face the music and to start moving some guys. I mean, Eric Halla had a heck of a tournament.
He did.
Bronze medal winner, Eric Halla. Line up your first round pick, please. So, I mean, Michael Bunting, Michael McCarron, Cole Smith. I mean, even a guy like, I mean, Nick Blankenberg, you know, he's been a great find for Nashville. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's 27. Does he really fit in the plan for the future? If you can get something for him, there's a lot of options out there. I think there's no fewer than three guys on this roster that will be gone by the trade deadline. I'm not sure exactly which three, but I think at the very least they have to trade those. I don't think O'Reilly is going to be one of those, by the way. I think not just because they need to hold on to him for this season, but I think that he's too important to like hold together the entire locker room for at least the next couple of years while they transition here. So I don't expect O'Reilly to be traded, but definitely a few of these guys are gone.
You didn't mention Saros, who was incredible. I mean, awfully good, although some people didn't see it that way, which I know that you took note of that on social media. But what Ian said, that people are talking about Saros.
Yeah. I pick up the phone. Trade that contract.
Trade? Yeah.
Oh, I had not seen that. I can't see that happening either. I mean, like, doesn't sound like something that could happen. Saros was every time you see Saros in like this scenario, I was thinking the other day, like, wouldn't it be kind of perfect if UC Saros is like best game of his entire career was not with the Nashville Predators, like if he had beaten Canada? And for a while it looked like that. That would just be perfect if UC Saros is, you know, after all this, the best game of his entire career was beating Canada in the tournament. It didn't happen, but it was looking like that for a little while. He was great. We'll see if it translates. And, you know, I mean, maybe there's something to the defense in front of him in Nashville that's not playing well. I don't buy that. I think he's not had a good season. I think there's no doubt about that. I know Robbie's talked about that. It just seems like he hasn't done well. But maybe he's found it again and he's ready to show off that, you know, top three, top five goaltender in the league type of performance the rest of the way.
We'll see what happens. Alex, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Definitely. I think that the Predators Blackhawks is going to be just as good.
I agree.
I'm so excited.
I'm looking forward to it coming up on Thursday. The pace will be the exact same.
How about the ads? You got an ads game coming up?
Admirals game coming up. We can get into that, too. Be good.
Yeah, there you go. We get some Milwaukee. Go watch some AHL after that action on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Alex Doherty, our guest here on the program. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
We need this team to win.
I want to know where to go.
I want winners.
Quit being a loser.
I'm from Canada. It's never too cold for ice cream.
If you don't stand with your fellow Canadians, then you are a rat.
You know, somebody's rats around here, so.
Would you call this cutting someone's jugular, Mike?
100-plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times. 11 times by this player. Joe.
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no.
Americans don't even know that there's a country north of them. Right.
Give me the go. I want the go.
To change the name of from Southeastern Conference or SEC to just America.
Good night, Canada.
God bless America. It is time for the Rob Rant here on the program. A victorious Rob Rant this morning as Team USA has won the gold medal against Canada. Have some of that. Love it.
Philip, what is it? Philip and
Terrence and Philip.
Terrence and Philip. Yeah. Oh, good God.
So I was going to use this to talk about the NHL at large, and don't ever tell me that yesterday's game wasn't worth sending your players over to the Olympics. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show.
Yep.
Because my goodness.
You're darn right.
I want to start with this. I have all the respect in the world for Connor McDavid. I do. I said it earlier in the show. I've said it many times. I believe he is the greatest hockey player I have ever seen in terms of just his pure ability out there. Now, at some point, probably needs to win something. But he's the greatest hockey player I think I've ever seen. He won the MVP of the tournament yesterday. And I'm trying to – like, I understand he set a record. I think he had 13 points. He had 2 goals, 11 assists, which was a record for a player at the Olympics. So I get that. Did you watch Connor Hellebuck in the gold medal game? Did you? And it wasn't just the gold medal game. Connor Hellebuck finished with a .956 save percentage in the tournament. .956, which was pretty darn good, man, and won the gold medal and basically single-handedly won him the gold medal in that game. Does that not count? Like, he can't be the MVP over Connor McDavid? Yeah. Like you said, Connor McDavid is, you know, he's won a Conn Smythe as playoff MVP when losing in the cup final. And frankly, that year I thought he should have won the Conn Smythe. I mean, it was unbelievable. I'm not saying McDavid shouldn't be at least worthy of consideration, but like the end result probably needs to matter, right? Like, you know, it would be one thing if Hellebuck was just okay throughout the tournament and then he had a great gold medal game. He was completely dominant the whole time. Like, I'm trying to understand how Hellebuck is not the MVP of the tournament. They just won the gold medal.
Well, I'll tell you how, because it's another in a long line of stupid voting situations. Everybody's tweeting about this yesterday. After the first period, the votes were due. First period.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
We don't have any room for, like, pivoting?
Yeah.
They talked
about Chandler Bing again?
On the Athletic podcast that I was listening to last night, Mark Lazarus, your colleague over there covering the team, brought that up.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
And he suggested there be a condition on there, like there is with other voting situations, where if the U.S. were to win the gold, Hellebuck would then become the MVP. And apparently there is no conditional list on there.
That's an easy thing to do.
Can we not just wait for the game to go final and then, like, send out an email and be like, hey, let's vote?
So the reason they don't do that is because they're counting all these writers to vote, and then they're all on deadline, and they're not going to do it. So that's why they don't do it. But which is why either do that, which I've voted in whatever. I don't even know what it was. Some bowl game or something, or I've definitely been situation where it's like, if this team wins this, if this team wins this, easy to do. Or you take 3 people. It'd be great to have. It'd be great to have, like, you know, as many possible voters and all that. I mean, shoot, man.
It's 2026. You can send a link that has, hey, click on who you think should be MVP. You click on it real quick. It takes 6 seconds. It's done.
Yeah.
What kind of deadline are you on?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have some people who wouldn't see it. And they're like, they're frantic, whatever. But, yeah, bottom line is vote in the first period for the MVP in this game where we have no idea what the outcome will be.
It's crazy.
That's it. Right. It's utterly stupid. So it's
absolutely crazy. Yeah. Hellebuck, the real MVP, the real Connor.
There you go.
In this tournament. That's what I have to say.
The better Connor.
That's right. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.